show. Head on to Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Cold River Mountain Watch. Cold River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome along, Mark Levine. Thank you very much for the usual workmanlike and high-quality hour of conversation radio. You know, he laid out by playing that odious Mike Lane creature. He laid out a roadmap for what I think we will see with the dead enders. The 20%ers of the Repig-Lickin' Party. This is what we're going to put up with from them for the next 4 to 8 years. And Mark Levine is entirely correct. If Barack Obama were to bring world peace, these dead-enders would still be screaming, "He's a Muslim! What about William Ayers? Oh, my God, Reverend Wright hates America." You know that. I know that. They are what they are. And, point of fact, they do what they do. It's about 2.5 minutes past the hour as we begin this Tuesday edition of Head On. And it is the 11th day of November. And no matter what else we get into for the rest of the evening, it would be improper not to note at the beginning of the show the significance of the day. We call it Veterans Day now. Its original significance lay in the fact that it is, in fact, the armistice. The anniversary of the armistice that brought to an end what was then known as the war to end all wars. A war that brought young men from all over the United States at the very, very end of the conflict to help bring that hellish nightmare to a close. A war born in foolishness and intransigence that claimed an entire generation. Yes. But we use this day now to honor all people, all men, all women in the United States who have served under our flag and honored the oath that they took to we, the people. And so I want to bring a couple of things your way. A lot of the time, I refer to Eugene Fenerman as the most brilliant satirist on the Internet. That is possibly, well, that is for certain. That is unfair of me because while he is a brilliant satirist, he is also a brilliant student of history. And so, with that in mind, Eugene Finnerman's thoughts from over at Your RDA of Irony at FinnermanWorks.com. You know, you can get Your RDA of Irony for free in your email inbox every day, and not a day will go by that you will not be glad you signed up. If you haven't, I don't know why. Most places on the planet, you have to pay for intelligence and knowledge like this. But today, Eugene writes in a post titled Veterans Day at the Movies. On this day in 1918, Western civilization gave itself a slight respite from self-destruction. The armistice lasted 20 years, allowing sufficient time to allow the toddlers of 1918 to grow into their boots and helmets. And during that respite, corporals and sergeants promoted themselves to Führers and Duces. We Americans did actually win the First World War simply because we still had a breathing generation of draft-age men, and we showed up in France to fight at the right moment. Had the Chinese sent a million men to France in 1918, they could have won the war, too. Timing's everything. America was barely involved in World War I. We entered the war in 1917, missing all the excitement of Gallipoli, the Somme, and Verdun. More doughboys died from influenza than Krupp munitions. Our chief casualties may have been Mary Pickford and Lillian Gish, who were constantly escaping a fate worse than death from the Hunnish clutches, or whatever the pertinent organ, of Erich von Stroheim in Hollywood's depictions of the war. It should be noted that in her long career, Miss Gish was also nearly raped during the French Revolution and the American Civil War. Given our limited participation in the Great War, we commemorate November 11th as a catch-all day for all of our veterans. However, if you really want to honor the veterans of the most futile war in history, you can do so any day on Turner Classic Movies. Just turn on a film from the Golden Age of Hollywood and look at the British actors. To a man, they served in a far more harrowing theater than all the terrors of working with Betty Davis. Many of them were left scarred. Herbert Marshall had the unique distinction of being a leading man with a wooden leg. Claude Rains was blind in one eye. When you see Ronald Coleman's fencing in The Prisoner of Zenda, you wouldn't know that he had a kneecap shot off. Lieutenant Nigel Bruce was machine-gunned in the buttocks. That is not the kind of wound that gets the Victoria Cross. If Leslie Howard seemed introspective and otherworldly, shell shock can do that. In fact, to save time, let me recite the British actors who somehow avoided being maimed in France. Well, Leo G. Carroll was wounded in the Middle East. At least he had that originality. And Captain Basil Rathbone, decorated for courage, really should have been awarded for remarkable luck. Not a scratch. The most veteran of the British veterans was Donald Crisp, the kindly father figure in so many films of the 30s and 40s. He did an incestuous interest in Lillian Gish in Broken Blossoms. You know, I'm starting to have my suspicions about Miss Gish. Did the woman gargle pheromones? Crisp fought in the Boer War and then served again in the Great War. If you want to see a microcosm of British history, watch the 1940 production of Pride and Prejudice. The middle-aged actors, Edmund Gwenn and Melville Cooper, had served in the Great War. The younger members of the cast, Laurence Olivier and Bruce Lester, were about to have their turn. The armistice was about to end. And Erich von Stroheim was about to threaten a new generation of actresses. Tell me where else you're going to get that. Thank you, Eugene. Brilliant, my friend, as usual. And these words have become a tradition with the program since, 2004. Maybe 2003. Nah, 2004. The single most well-known piece of poetry by one Wilfred Owen, the most well-known piece of poetry to come out of the First World War, that exercise in monstrous ignorance and futility, a poem by the name of Dulce et Decorum Est. Bent double, like old beggars under sacks, knock-kneed, coughing like hags, we cursed through sludge, till on the haunting flares we turned our backs, and towards our distant rest began to trudge. Men marched asleep. Many had lost their boots, but limped on, bloodshod. All went lame. All blind, drunk with fatigue, deaf even to the hoots of tired, outstripped five nines that dropped behind.
Gas! Gas! Quick, boys!
An ecstasy of fumbling, fitting the clumsy helmets just in time. But someone still was yelling out and stumbling and floundering like a man in fire or lime. Dim through the misty panes and thick green light as under a green sea. I saw him drowning. In all my dreams, before my helpless sight, he plunges at me, guttering, choking, drowning. If in some smothering dreams you, too, could pace behind the wagon that we flung him in and watch the white eyes writhing in his face, his hanging face like a devil's sick of sin, if you could hear, at every jolt, the blood come gargling from the froth-corrupted lungs, obscene as cancer, bitter as the cut of vile incurable sores on innocent tongues. My friend, you would not tell with such high zest to children ardent for some desperate glory the old lie, dulce et decorum est pro patria mori. That's one worth remembering. That may be some of the first honest realism about warfare that the 20th century heard. And, of course, there is all quiet on the Western Front. There is the entire catalog of the lost generation, lost from what they had experienced in the futility and agony, hatred and misery, blood and death of the First World War. John Dos Passos, Fitzgerald, Hemingway. It was to Hemingway that Gertrude Stein allegedly said, "You are all a lost generation." And lost indeed they were. Or were they? Were they lost or were they kidnapped? And here it is, the 11th of November, 2008. Every bit of 90 years since that armistice was signed. 90 years to the very day. And the sicknesses remain. The cancers remain. The agonies remain. The folly of old men is paid in blood with the ardor of the young. And it is an unpardonable sin that old men, and now in the 21st century, old women, send young men, and now in the 21st century, young women, off to have their lives not lost. Not lost, but by God, stolen. So whatever you have done today, if you have not, and many of you have, I'm sure most of you have, but if you have not, get on the internet. Look at pictures of the doughboys. Look at pictures of those who went off to the Second World War. pictures of those from Korea, from Vietnam. And now, to our eternal agony, pictures of young men and women who have had their lives, their futures, their hopes, and their dreams stolen in the sands of Iraq and the unforgiving hills of Afghanistan, stolen by brutish, monstrous, demonic old men like George Bush and Dick Cheney, who do in fact tell that old lie. They told it today. Dulce et decorum est pro patria mori. I personally remember today my father. I personally remember today the uncle I never knew, Fred. I take time today to remember the uncle who adored my mother. A great uncle, actually. Floyd Bryan. They called him Jimmy. He never came back from the Bulge. I remember my grandfather, and we have his photo in his doughboy vest. I remember them all. That someday, no one will, with the same grief and the same sad sense of loss and theft, have to remember mine and yours. This is the Horn.
What can you see from your window? I can't see anything from mine. Flags on the side of the highway and scripture on grocery store signs. Maybe 18 was too early, maybe 30 or 40 years too. You get your chance to make peace with the man, or is something on his angel. Thank you.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. I'm already worried that Obama's drifting in the wrong direction. His appointment of Rahm Emanuel was the first bad sign. Emanuel helped Bill Clinton drive NAFTA through Congress, and he's a DLCer through and through. The next bad sign was the leak that Obama was considering Lawrence Summers as Treasury Secretary. As Naomi Klein has pointed out, Summers was one of the architects and enforcers of disaster capitalism, and he helped deregulate the financial sector. We're also hearing that Obama may keep Robert Gates at defense, a guy who recently said we need more nuclear weapons. Hey, I thought Obama said he was for nuclear disarmament. And now the Wall Street Journal is reporting that Obama's unlikely to rectify the spying abuses that were so rampant under Bush-Cheney. Oh, I understand what's going on here. The Washington establishment and the pundit class exert a tremendous centrifugal force against real change. And then there's Obama's own cautiousness, which served him well when he was running for president, but won't serve him or the country well now, not when we need decisive action on the economy and when we need our rights and liberties restored. Not later, now. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at CityNet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit CityNet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
past the hour. And, you know, sorry to start the program on such a downer. It's not a downer to take note of the sacrifice of the, and the sacrifice of those who were willing to do so. But I don't believe in sugarcoating it. I don't believe in prettying it up. And something like Dulce et Decorum Est marked the end of the heroic, in many ways, the heroic stuff. You know, about 75 years before, or maybe not even that, no. About 50 years before Wilfred Owen wrote what he wrote, Alfred Lord Tennyson gave the world half a league, half a league, half a league onward. All in the valley of death rode the 600. Forward, the light brigade! Charge for the guns! He said, into the valley of death rode the 600. Forward, the light brigade! Was there a man dismayed? Not though the soldier knew someone had blundered. Theirs not to make reply, theirs not to reason why, theirs but to do and die. Into the valley of death rode the 600. All right, that's almost, as far as Victorian poetry goes, almost naturalism. But in the sixth stanza, when can their glory fade? Oh, the wild charge they made. All the world wondered. Honor the charge they made. Honor the Light Brigade, noble 600. And there's truth to it. We need more poems, I suppose, about the idiots that let these things happen. About the idiots who marched those young men into the teeth of bayonets on Cemetery Ridge at Gettysburg, and George Pickett standing there with his oiled curls. Fool. Fool. And these things stand for you and I, you and me. Bob just took the grammar out behind the barn and beat it to death again. These things stand for you and me as a clear reminder of what we have to do. I don't know if you were paying attention when Matthew Rothschild of the Progressive gave his little assessment of what he calls the rightward drift of the Obama administration. But it is clear that we're going to be in Iraq for a while yet. It is clear that there are some in the new administration who think that Afghanistan is just really groovy, neato, hepcat keen. And they are fools. They are fools who will not have any coffins brought home to them. I have urged, what did I call it, tempered optimism with regard to this administration, and I maintain that stance. I maintain that position. But there are some areas on which there is no negotiation. These wars, these occupations, for the love of God, they aren't wars anymore. These occupations must end. They're a violation of what the American military is designed to do, for starters. That's just from a sort of a, what, that's just from a purely pragmatic standpoint. But they are also violations of everything that America stands for and should be. And we have no recourse. The one place where there is no negotiation, the one place where there is no middle ground. What did they call the middle ground? at Verdun, at the Somme. What did they call the middle ground? No man's land. It was not a place you wanted to be. Where these hellish occupations are concerned, I think I'm preaching and it's not even Wednesday. Where these hellish occupations are concerned, you do not want to be in no man's land. The line is bright and the line is clear, and it's thin enough that it admits no one standing in the middle of it. You are either for this misery, you are for this hell, you are for this utter violation of all that it means to be a citizen of the American Republic, or you recognize what the Republic is meant to be, you know its history, and you stand four square against these occupations and the hell and horror that they bring home to mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, to the hell they leave in places like Helmand and Kandahar, in Baghdad and Al-Nasiriya, in Fallujah, in Al-Anbar. That's where we have to keep the pressure up. That is the work that stands before us. It must end. No incrementalism. It must end. So I hope that you'll pardon the time that we have spent on this. But I've noticed of late that we have not spent, especially during the politigasm of the election season, we have spent precious little time on this dredging, of the American Constitution, this dredging of the flag, this dredging of all that we are through gutters filled with blood and guts and pus. We've not spent the time on it that we should have, and for that I apologize. But let it be clear, on this day, this 90th anniversary of the end of the war to end all wars, that our job is nowhere near done, that we are nowhere near the goal of creating a peaceful earth. Nowhere near. And our work is not even begun. I saw a story over at CNN earlier today. World War II vet held in Nazi slave camp breaks silence, let it be known. And it was what it was intended to be. A harrowing reminder. A story of Anthony Acevedo, who to this day keeps with him a diary that he kept during his captivity in a Nazi stalag, of his life there, the death march away, the torture, the torment, the war crimes. 84 years old, and I had no idea when I read this article that upon his release, the federal government, the United States government, forced him and the rest of the survivors to sign pledges swearing that they would never, ever, ever, ever tell what happened to them. The document said you must give no account of your experience in books, newspapers, periodicals, or in broadcasts or in lectures. Just above the signature block, the signature line, the statement, I understand that disclosure to anyone else will make me liable to disciplinary action. That sort of makes your stomach do little flip-flops, doesn't it? One wonders how many veterans of the Second World War went to their graves carrying secrets like that that they were compelled not to share. For my part, though, in reading this story, this was what grabbed me. Born July 31, 1924 in San Bernardino, California, Anthony C. Acevedo is what is known in today's parlance as a citizen child, one who was born in the United States to parents from Mexico. Well, citizen child may be the phrase that this author at CNN uses, but that author apparently does not listen to right-wing hate radio or read right-wing websites because they have another name for it. They call the Anthony Acevedos of the world anchor babies because they get born here in the United States and it anchors them into our culture. He was schooled in Pasadena, California, separate but equal, couldn't attend classes with his white fellow students. In 1937, both of his parents were deported to Mexico. He went with them. At the age of 17, he returned to the United States because he wanted to enlist in the United States Army. Imagine that. Imagine that. The United States kicks you out of this country, and you come back to ask them if you may offer your very life for its defense. That was 1941. He was trained as a medic. He was captured at the Battle of the Bulge, where my great uncle Jimmy was killed. What he saw, he has never forgotten. And he was at Stalag 9B, which was a sub-prison to the Nazi death camp. A Nazi death camp. And he was segregated from his group and sent to another camp because of his looks. The Germans asked for any Jews in the ranks to step forward. Jewish soldiers ripped Star of David necklaces from around their necks and tried to conceal who they were. They were taken to a place called Berga. They were set to work as slave labor. They were given 100 grams of bread per week that was made of redwood sawdust, ground glass, and barley. They made soup from cats and rats, occasionally gnawing on dandelion leaves. A quote from Anthony Acevedo. Prisoners were being murdered and tortured by the Nazis. Many of our men died, and I tried keeping track of who they were and how they died. And the irony? The irony is that what was done to Anthony Acevedo's comrades by the Nazis were called war crimes, and punishment was meted out via a system of justice developed after the war at Nuremberg. And yet what was done to Anthony Acevedo and his comrades would, within the framework, many of these things would, within the framework of the legal memoranda crafted in the last 8 years by people like David Addington and John Yoo, war criminals in their own right. The things that were done to Anthony Acevedo that were torture when done to Americans, were war crimes when done to Americans, were declared by the Bush administration to be not torture, to be acceptable means of enhanced interrogation. Irony? Sickness. Monstrosity. Demonic presence in our government. Imagine that. Being beaten. Being tortured and tormented by members of the Wehrmacht. War crime. If, however, it is done at Guantanamo to, say, a young man captured when he was 14 years old, and these people are real, a young man captured when he was 14 years old, who has now known fully a third of his life in a concentration camp in Cuba. Well, if we do that, if we do the same things that were done to Anthony Acevedo and his comrades, and we do it at Guantanamo Bay, thanks to the work of John Yoo, David Addington, Dick Cheney, and others, it's patriotic. Do you see the work that lies before us? There is the joyful work of making sure that the things that most need doing get done, the positive things, the good things, the things that will bring a return to decency and hope for this culture and this republic and its tormented constitution. But there is still some unpleasant stuff that should be done, must be done. And that is to track down the David Addingtons, to track down the John Yoos, to put them on trial for their lives, and to display via a completely fair prosecution, open and notorious, what monsters of humanity they are. These people who said that if it doesn't cause organ failure or death, it isn't torture. Think of that. That's jumper cables and batteries attached to human flesh, doused in water. That's chaining a human being to a wall for hours, days on end, naked, freezing, in a concrete room, with the steady drone and drumbeat of music played at jet engine levels. Standing them up, sitting them down, crouching them, beating them, sicking dogs on them, performing simulated sex acts on them, forcing them to perform sex acts on each other. I'm not making this up, you know that. This is a litany of what the Bush administration has done in the last 5 years. 6 years, 7 years. Everything that I have described, they have admitted to doing. And, of course, they followed it up with, well, but it's not torture. Enhanced interrogation. Remember that old war criminal Rumsfeld saying, well, I sometimes stand for 7 or 8 hours. I prefer to stand when I'm working. Am I being tortured? No, you old war criminal, you're not being tortured. You should nearly be tried and convicted and sent away so that you can never do any further harm to the human race. The postscript, the positive part of Anthony Acevedo's story as relayed at CNN, is that he decided to break his silence. He decided to share the contents of that diary that he had kept with him all these long years and these many decades. At 84, he travels to high schools, colleges, civic groups, and he tells them what he witnessed and what he lived through. And perhaps for a few moments, the people listening don't see some 84-year-old man standing before them. Rather, they see a kid of 18, 19, 20, having heaped into his brain more misery, more horror, more hell than any human being should ever be asked to endure. And so, yes, good for him. Good that he has broken his silence. Good that he refuses to forget. And good that he insists on letting generations beyond him know what fascism is, what fascism does, how fascism behaves, how it sounds, so that we may be ever on guard against it and drive from the midst of peace-loving and decent people anyone with an inclination toward it. Brothers and sisters, we got a house cleaning coming. I have no tolerance for fascists. None. And I don't think that that is contrary to anything that we fought against in the Second World War. We talk about the First Amendment. I am not a portion of the federal government. I am not bound by the First Amendment. And to that end, I have no tolerance for fascist talk, no tolerance for fascist behavior, and no tolerance for fascists at all. And like you, when I see it, I call it. So that's the first hour tonight, and I don't think it's necessary. If you have any thoughts of your own, I welcome you to share them. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Or on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Bring anything that you want to the table. Because there's an abundance to go into. And at some point tonight, I hope that we will have a chance to go over a little piece of right-wingery, because I think it would be valuable to actually take time and study it critically. Because this is these dead-enders are simply stunning. And, yeah, they're fascists. Wrapped in the flag and carrying a cross. That's how it was defined, wasn't it? And yea, verily, these many decades later, that is in fact how they arrive in this land. And if you do not stomp them out early, they grow like the most noxious and poisonous of weeds. And finally, before we move on to any other subject or any other phone call, one last thing. we have a lot of veterans in our audience, and some even in our right here immediately within the Horn organization itself. Wayne, the boss man, is a veteran. We have veterans in the audience. I know that, of course, Bob in North Dakota is a veteran. I know that Albert served his time in the military. I know that many did. And to all of you, I offer my humble gratitude. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brother Bob, how are we today?
Well, speak of the devil.
Well, you summoned me. I couldn't help it. When you sacrificed those two goats, I'm on my way.
I know. It's the smoke blows all the way from West Virginia to Wisconsin.
Yeah. Well, thankfully, it's hopefully maybe one day soon it won't anymore. But, and I totally agree with you. These people are, they're outrageous. I mean, I'm going to have to just crack open the dictionary. I know it's been a little while. It's been a few years.
Wear it out.
I'm going to have to. I'm going to have to recharge my vocabulary because the things that you hear these putrid bastards talk about, I know Chris Matthews hit on it, and I hate to follow him up, but the guy, I had to agree with him when he was talking to that Republican strategist. I don't even know why these people are even given any airtime. I don't even understand anymore. They're so bankrupt on so many levels. They literally should go sit in the corner for.
Exactly, Albert. If there was somebody out there who wanted equal time, see that. Well, why are they given airtime? Because IOKIYAR. If you're a wingnut, you're given airtime for balance. If your position is that the moon is made of green cheese and the earth is flat, and you've got a Republican pedigree, you will be brought on things like Tweety Matthews, Joe Scarborough, any show on Fox, and you will be, and your crazy-ass, illogical, unprovable, utterly disprovable opinion will be honored as though it were as valid as fact.
Yeah. And you know how I feel about consciousness, and you know that is just that's pollutants. That's such a pollutant of consciousness. It's not even funny. It's like that's kind of in a sense. It's outrageous. It's outrageous to try to pretend. Oh, bro, you know. And I liked what Tweety Bird did say. He's like, you know, you're talking with a forked tongue. You're sitting here trying to pretend like, you know, somebody, you know, when liberals win in a landslide, they should, you know, tiptoe very lightly and say sorry for being here. You know, I mean, Bush gets, you know, half a percentage point and loses the popular vote and he's got a mandate. And, you know, it's one of these things where, I hope that landslide, in a sense, knocked any kind of centrist nonsense or right centrist. You know, that's the key word right there. I mean, centrist is fine. I mean, middle of the road is okay if nobody else is on it. But you know,
middle of the road is okay if everything's all right.
Well, yeah, true, exactly. I mean, when the right wing, as you're talking about, these fascists pull us all the way off and we're off the road. Now, I don't know, I'm sure out there you guys have mountains, so you probably have cliffs that, you know, ended nowhere, you know.
Yeah, I was on one of those roads just Sunday.
Yeah, oh, I like those roads. They make your hands all sweaty.
Yeah, they do. Well, if you, by the way, not to take you off topic, but if you go over to headonradionetwork.com and you click on photo gallery, you can see what I saw on that road with no rail. Never mind the horse with no name. I was on a road with no rail. it's a beautiful view from up there. But it makes it, you know, that sort of feeling that goes all the way to the pit of your stomach and maybe further down.
Exactly.
You're right. The Bush administration, these right wingers, these hardcore dead enders have driven us off the road, over the berm, past the shoulder and into the ditch.
Yeah, we'll be lucky if we can turn to the left and get back on the road. I mean, we'll be lucky for that, you know. And honestly, I remember we talked about this years and years and years ago, that really the Republicans in there are really suited. They're best at being a minority party. You know what I mean? Like, if you actually give them the sense of, you know, something that they have to kind of fight for the little guy and, you know, do the tax deal and all this other little things that, you know, well, kind of help make, give this country momentum and help us move forward. And they're really, their role is best suited for, is best regulated to the minority. You know, business interests, you know, there's got to be some sort of punishment for being immortal. And these corporations are nothing short of immortal. So, I mean, especially now that, you know, they're too big to fail. So, you know, maybe if people can keep their sense and, you know, the Republican Party, I know we want to see it into the dustbin, but, you know, you know that they're far too self-delusional to freaking even pretend that, you know, they're like the Black Knight. That's what they feel like. You know, you cut their leg off. Oh, it's just a flesh wound. And, you know, it's just, you know, it's, oh, go bite your ankles. Get over here. I mean, that's kind of how they remind me. I exactly. I mean, that's
what, you know that's what Newt Gingrich was like back in the 80s before the ascendancy of the Contract on America. I happened to be working in Georgia at the time, so there was a lot of Newt Gingrich coverage. And I and my friends just all looked at, and this is a cautionary tale, Albert. My friends and I all looked at this guy and went, wow, he's nuts. I mean, he's, you know, nuts, crazy. Because he's out there talking about how we got to bring God back in the schools and that. And he's in the minority and everything. And, you know, thank God this guy's not in any kind of leadership position. But the tale is cautionary, as I say, because we did. We looked at him and went, he's nuts, and moved on. But he never stopped being nuts, and he never stopped being just filled with bile and hate. And he got other people to hate with him, and look what they did to us.
Well, exactly, and that's kind of why I say they're best regulated to being a minority party, because you know, now that they've exposed themselves, I mean, I hate to say it, they're their own worst enemy. I mean, like, I really do think that that they're going to face, you know, severe repercussions from this. I don't think they're going to be able to get away with the crap that they were so used to getting away with over the years. Like, you know, the family, whatever, American family or socialization. You ruined that word for me. I can't even say it anymore because that makes me laugh. But, you know, like, the things that they've done, and especially on this Prop 8 crap, you know, it's kind of akin to this torture crap. I think people have opened their eyes, and they're like, wait a minute, why can't they have their own? Wait, you're doing this from the pulpit? That kind of stuff is going to make people say, well, you know, maybe we should reassess how these churches, how these churches get their tax-free status, you know? All we need to do is show a couple more guys in gold-plated jets and, you know, the credit cards, and you know I've been practicing that song, the Moth Rust Hillside parody, because when them Mormons come to my house, I'm just gonna bust out into it.
I know.
Praise the Lord. I'm gonna love them. It's gonna be a great day. But until that day,
for all the cash I've got. Yeah, I know. See, don't make me sing.
My yacht. But, no, I mean, come on. If they're sitting here with their crap and they're pulling these kind of things as they were doing, you know, I'm sure somebody got a tape of it or something like that where they were handing out and telling people how to vote and all this stuff. Like, isn't that, like, just a huge no-no? And, you know, if the ACLU is good enough to defend Joe Wurzelbacher, I don't know how those lawyers do it. I don't really understand.
Well, the way they do it, Albert, is that they have a single-minded love of the Constitution.
Yeah.
And of an America that's a free exchange. And I honor what they do. You know, it's kind of interesting. You bring up the ACLU. You know, Flush Limbaugh used to rail against the ACLU. My friends, they will be the death of our society. You noticed he kind of shut up about the ACLU after they pulled his gelatinous fat out of the fire with his doctor shopping charge?
Yep. Yeah, oh, I love them. I think they're awesome. I mean, I have an ACLU sticker on my front door, you know, so it's just, I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, anybody who ever talks bad about the ACLU to my face is, they're going to get an earful and a half. And usually the Rush Limbaugh thing is usually the first thing that comes out, and I hit them with that, and they get to the ground, and I put their head on the curb, and I just start stomping with all kinds of other things that make it a fun day. Because, I mean, the ACLU is certainly, without a doubt, one of those things that, yeah, all right, you know, I can understand how some people go and they start rolling their eyes, and they're like, oh, here they go again, you know, defending this creep or that creep. But it's really, as Noam Chomsky said, it's, you know, you support freedom of speech for views you don't agree with, or you don't really support it at all. And so it's, I don't know, to me, it's a very important, it's a mega important role that these people play.
Yes, it is.
And the only thing I would like to see is really the thing that needs to get cleaned up, and you know it as well as I do, is the media. The media really needs an awakening. I hope, in a sense, you know, now that, you know, after all the years of Rush Limbaugh, it took them a long time, didn't it? If you think about it, it took them a very, very long time to build up that head of steam until, you know, until we had Fox News and their nonsense and all their commentary and Sean Hannity's and all those other, you know, little scat munchers. It took a long time for that to kind of boom. But really, Keith Olbermann kind of, I mean, yeah, I know, you know, people have problems with him, but I'll tell you what.
He's delivered some stirring stuff, and yeah, some people thought, and maybe he did go over the top on a couple of occasions, but what he did with his comment regarding Proposition 8 was nothing short, Albert, of, I mean, the Emmy, Peabody, whatever you want to give the guy, give it to him for that.
Yeah.
Because it was... our buddy Dennis sent me the link to the video, and I was, wow!
Mm-hmm. Torture. How about when he railed against torture?
Yeah.
And everything else that, you know, I mean, in a way, I mean, there was always you, and there was always Mike Malloy, and we always had those voices, but it was, I mean, in a sense, this is our own small little echo chamber. This is our choir. You know, and then when he started kind of, you know, he sat there, and I liked his, you know, his whole reasoning of he was basically sitting there looking at the newspaper saying, you know, somebody should speak out about this, you know, somebody should say something. And, oh, hey, I can say something, and he started to do it, and I think, you know, he may have watched Good Night, Good Luck one too many times, but, you know, it's a good movie. Edward R. Murrow was a hero. I mean, that movie came out, he watched it, boom, 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 next thing you know, he's like, hell, we need that guy again. And here he is. And you know what? Until he starts lying and creating crap, which I haven't seen him do yet,
Okay,
then I will continue to watch him. I mean, I will continue to give him my support because, you know, it's like Bill O'Reilly and the war against Christmas. Yeah, it is that time again.
He's already unveiled this year. He's giving away a bumper sticker that says, "We say Merry Christmas." Flanked by the fleur-de-lis, like I said the other night, what the fleur-de-lis has with Christmas, I for the life of me don't know. But yeah, you get a bumper sticker that says, "We say Merry Christmas," if you order his stupid little book.
The fleur-de-lis, huh? Wait, but that's French.
Yeah, a little bit. Well, no, a whole lot. It's really sort of ultra-French now, isn't it?
You know, he's such a moron. I'm so sick of this guy.
Makes you want to eat dirt and run rabbits, doesn't it?
I just want to knock my face against the wall. I mean, it's just unbelievable that this guy, how did this guy get $40 million? How did this guy get $40 million, whatever, how much money he got? How did this happen? And Bob Kincaid's over here, you know.
Yeah, don't make me go into the list of what Bob Kincaid, no, don't.
No, I'm serious. You know how we feel about you here, but I mean, come on now. And you know, these guys with their bullcrony and their bullcrap, whatever. I'm not trying to say that they don't have a place, because I mean, you can't really say that. I mean, you really can't. It's just not one of them. I mean, like, it was important for Hitler to exist. It was important for so we know how not to be. And it was important for George Bush to do these things, or we would have never had a president.
That's the other thing. I saw a reference to, sorry, didn't mean, I, oh, dadgummit, I apologize. But I saw the reference, and I think it was in the story of Anthony Acevedo that I was just talking about. Got all the way down to the bottom of the story, and I'm kind of glad you mentioned it, because and this, now, bear in mind, this is not a quote, okay? This is by the writer of the article, one Wayne Drash and Thelma Gutierrez and Sarah Weisfeld at CNN. This is three paragraphs from the bottom. Acevedo says the world must never forget the atrocities of World War II and that for killing 6 million Jews, Hitler was the worst terrorist of all time.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Hitler wasn't a terrorist. Hitler was a monster. Hitler was a head of was a psychotic head of state. No. Bin Laden's a terrorist. Because the only thing he has is terror. He doesn't have an army, doesn't have an air force, doesn't have a navy. All he has. But that sort of grabbed me, Albert, because for these writers of this story to call Hitler a terrorist, it's a slap in the face to the very thing that they're trying to remember.
Yeah, it does. It kind of cheapens it. It's important for words. I mean, it's important that we don't let these words fly down the memory hole. And it's important that we, you know, understand the correct definitions of words. I mean, that's one of my favorite things is linguistics. I mean, not because I'm a whatever. I just like going, oh, is that what that word means? Oh, that makes sense now. Government, govern to control, mental, mind control. Oh, that makes a lot more sense now.
Wouldn't that sentence have made a lot more sense if it had said Hitler was the worst fascist of all time?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what he was. He wasn't a terrorist. He was a fascist doing what fascists do.
With a daddy problem.
Yeah.
And some self-loathing. In the bigger picture.
But he liked dogs.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, but he didn't. He liked carrots too, and turnips, and methamphetamine. And if you've ever seen Downfall, have you seen that movie yet?
No.
It's a really good movie. Really good movie. And you watch Downfall, and then go look up on YouTube Downfall Xbox. Like write Downfall and Xbox,
mm-hmm.
And that stuff is just hysterical. But no, that movie Downfall is actually really good. It's it's based on the last couple days. I think it starts out when he's giving the Hitler Youth their little buttons and stuff, and the actor that just plays him in that movie is just insanity. I mean, the guy was he did such a good job, and I just like good acting. So I mean, to me, if somebody does a role like excellently as that guy did, and you know, it's just something that you certainly watch it. It's certainly a nice little. They did all kinds of research. They did a lot of research. They actually just pulled from the documentary Blind Spot. Have you ever seen that?
That one,
the Secretary.
That one seems familiar. Of course, so many. Maybe I don't know.
Yeah, not enough time to watch everything we need to, but. No, and it is one of these things that, you know, it is important to study. I mean, God, we got to make, that's another thing in terms of school, bud. We got to make history, like, fun. Because history is such an important subject, and it's like the subject that people always seem to hate. You know, they hate social studies, they hate history, you know, and we seem to only push math and science, yet, I don't know, I'm still looking for a use for algebra. But, we're talking about history. History can help steer us in better direction. I mean, history would be like cleaning the barnacles off the bottom of this ship of state.
Well, I've learned, and you'll find out as your darling daughters get a little older. Even as kids rise into, we've sent one all the way through high school so far. We've got one in ninth grade, one in seventh, and one in sixth. And without fail, they've all been given all the way to the end what I refer to as the little golden book version of history. Mm-hmm. And they'll come in and tell me something that they learned in school, and, you know, poor little kids, their father is me.
Yeah.
And, hey, come here.
That's what I'm laughing about.
And we sit down, and I'll tell them something. They'll go, really? I'm like, guys, I love you, but I don't have time to pull your leg. Yeah, really. And they'll go, and you don't want to know the number of times that my little addendums to history have gotten them in the soup. It's kind of like that moment in To Kill a Mockingbird when the teacher tells Scout to go home and tell her father to quit teaching her to read, that she's ruining everything for her. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to learn to read. I just watched his finger as I sat on his lap. Well, you stop that.
See, that's a fear of mine. I don't want to ruin my kids for school, and I don't want school to ruin their desire to learn. So that's a rock and a hard place, isn't it?
It is, and you're going to find yourself just sort of, the minute they enter school, your kids, you're going to be on watch, on guard.
Mm-hmm.
And because, I mean, the first time you see the high school history text, you will tear at your clothing and run in the yard. Chapter 2, The Presidents. The presidents were all great men. George Washington and Abraham Lincoln were really, really great. Chapter 3, Geography. America is big. Chapter 4. It's pathetic.
America kicks ass. Yeah.
America. Yeah. You remember.
Yeah. America. That's what you got to say. Yeah. Oh, man, I'll tell you, though. I mean, really, though, I mean, you know, back to these cretins. You know, I don't know where they get the audacity. You know, I know Barack Obama wrote a book, Audacity of Hope. One day I'll crack it open and read it. When, you know, I got a long list of books to read, and not enough time. I don't think I got enough time in my life to read them all. But you know, somebody's gonna have to write a book. Maybe I'll have to do it, just chronicling the audacity of these bastards. I mean, I don't know how many times, it's like Rudy Giuliani coming out with a law against, you know, cross-dressing. And
or cross-dressing and smoking cigars.
Exactly. They get stomped, like literally stomped. They get put in the Jack LaLanne juicer, okay? And then they come out, you know, like saying, hey, don't you think about going too far. You still have to rule from the right.
Ah, this is center-right country. I don't think they even know what center-right country means.
These people are so delusional. They think they're center-right.
I mean, if they knew what center-right meant, if they knew what right-wing meant, they wouldn't be it. They'd call themselves something else. I mean, right, you know, is Pinochet. Right is Mussolini. Right is Hitler.
Hitler. I mean, come on. I don't care.
You know, right wing is the Bush family being part of a. And you know, this isn't wild conspiracy theory. The Bush family was part of a plot to depose FDR, and they tried to drag Smedley Butler into it to do the job for them.
Amen.
Brown, that's right wing.
Exactly. That's right wing, exactly. And, you know, like when they talk about war heroes, and I know Smedley Butler probably wouldn't have called himself one because he hated the wars that he was involved with, but when he sits there and does something like that, my God, I wish we had generals like that today. Well, we do have a few, but they wind up getting fired. And, you know, I got to reread that. I'm going to have that book on my shelf for my children. That's an important book to have, if I can find it. Do they even still print that one, War's a Racket?
I've seen it linked online a couple of times.
Yeah, I know my library system has it over here, and, you know, my library system's, I don't know, hippie radicals, so maybe. But it really, I mean, come on now. I mean, you look at what that man did. He could have went along with it. He could have went along. As you know, hate to say it, Colin Powell would have went along. He would have. You know, still not, you know, he could back Obama, and that's fine. And I won't say it's all about race, because I thought his reasoning on that made sense. But I don't forget me lie, and I don't forget, you know, the Iraq War and the first Gulf War, and I don't forget any of that. You know, he has a lot of, you know, he has a lot of crap to atone for in just the eyes, I think, of the people. You know, I'm not big on this hero worship crap, and he certainly wouldn't be up there on my list. But, you know, I think it's almost in a sense, you know, maybe that's an important aspect of history. So, you know, we can not only compare monsters to present-day leaders, but we can also compare, like, real heroes to present-day leaders. You know, when we sit around, you know, I mean, you know, you sit there, Bob, think about it. How many people can you mention Smedley Butler to?
Not a bunch.
Not a bunch, exactly. Who? Smedley Butler. You don't know who he is? No. I mean, heck, how many people know who even Hoover was? I mean,
and there's the problem. You know, I sat down and explained, you know, before I ever opened the show, I took time because, you know, one of the nice things, my father did a good job of making sure that my children remember those who didn't come back from the Second World War. And I just reminded them of what today was. And, well, in fact, one of them did, reminded me, yesterday, Doodle said, you know, Daddy, we should take flowers up to Uncle Fred's grave today. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Albert, I'm going to roll on, brother. Hit a couple more phone calls. Thanks for everything. And,
thank you for everything. And we'll talk later.
All right. Take care. Bye.
All right, brother. Be good. Bye-bye.
Brother Albert in the far wilds of Wisconsin. And rolling on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, that would be Kate from the far wilds of Dixie.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you for the beginning of the show. That was very moving. I'd almost forgotten that it was Veterans Day today, only because this morning I started out choking a sob with a mouthful of cereal, listening to a lieutenant coming home from Nam. It was a nice essay, and I didn't realize it was going to go where it went. And I'm just sitting there eating my cereal, a tear in my eye, and then all of a sudden I was sobbing, and I had a mouthful of cereal, and I thought, this is a nice way to start a day.
This will not end well. Yeah.
It may end better. I don't have too much to add to. I'm trying to flip into the stream here in an appropriate way because I don't want to talk about politics because I'm.
You go anywhere you want to.
I'm just not there, and what else? Oh, and as you were talking about all the people coming home and the man who come back to the country to fight, that it always amazes me how many of the Native Americans who are so patriotic, and I think, oh, don't you understand what they have done to you? Oh, well, anyway.
You don't want
me to get into politics.
No, but the same thing applies to the South, Kate.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the segment of the country that kicked the Yankees butts all over everything east of the United States, and were finally overwhelmed by sheer weight of numbers. I had another one of those beautiful moments with Eugene Finnerman, I guess, just the other day when he wrote a piece on Andersonville, you know, the notorious southern prison concentration camp.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he pointed out that, lo and behold, his great-grandfather was captured at the Battle of Peachtree Creek and was held at Andersonville and was one of the very few survivors.
Mm.
And that's kind of what won the war for the North. They took a lot of immigrants off the boat and said, congratulations, welcome to America, you're in the Army now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a brilliant poem out there. It was a song lyric called I Fights mit Siegel.
Mm-hmm.
that was a big one in the North during the Civil War. But the irony is that the South is all for, we want to go to war with Kyrgyzstan. The South stands up as one and says, where do we go? Show me where to sign up.
Yeah. It's just all insane. It's not, I suffered quite a traumatic childhood because of untreated PTSD, and I didn't realize it until about 3 Veterans Days ago, 3 years ago. All of a sudden it dawned on me. I'm sitting there listening to my friend on talk radio in Phoenix, and God, I'm disappointed. I was going to say the name. Hackworth. He was celebrating Hack's birthday or something. I can't remember. Anyway, all of a sudden I started crying and realized, oh, my God, my father was suffering from PTSD and nobody knew it. And so, you know, there's a sort of a forgiveness thing going on there that he didn't know, I didn't know. But anyway, it doesn't. Veterans Day is not too good of a. It's not one of my days that I celebrate.
It's not one of the days to fire up the smoker and do the pulled pig or anything.
No, I spent the day in an empty office doing cleanup and tossing and just doing a general cleansing of this place. And we're doing a FEMA crap. Oh, but I want, before I get into that, I wanted to say, who is that good-looking B-52 mechanic on the front of your homepage?
Good-looking B-52 mechanic? Oh, my
Wayne.
God. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Isn't that great?
No, nobody remembers that he's a B-52 mechanic.
He is a B-52 mechanic. No, I remember. It just took me.
I can come out of left field if you need to.
Yeah, you could. Just come out of left field and, you know, the little circle of my world, and you just do that mathematical little tangent thing and then bounce away like a molecule. You know?
Yes, if anybody who knows me well enough knows that if you just hang around long enough, I'll finally get to the point, you know. Anyway, that was a nice shot of, you know, I mean, who was that other guy with him? And never mind. Anyway, I've never seen Wayne before, and I was glad that.
Oh, had you not?
No. And now I'll recognize him when I meet him.
Well, the coat's kind of a dead giveaway.
Yeah, really. Anyway, we're heading into just FEMA cleanup. They've got files in their offices that they're needing to get rid of, and so they're passing them on to the agency. There's a consortium called the MC, Mississippi Consortium of Case Management or something like that. Anyway, there's about 8 different agencies, and ours being one. And I'm still with the agency that deals with the disabled and elderly. And so we've been getting, they cherry picked the clients out that they feel like they can't handle. So we're getting them. And it's just I'm having to do, I'm so irreverent. The only thing I can, we have to take this crate of files and make this folder and then put these numbers on them and then, we need to do it, so I do them all over again. And then we'd need to pull all that out and put it in the, and it feels like Monty Python Flying Circus. the scene that I just can't get it out of my head is Jack Nicholson ordering food in 5 Easy Pieces.
Yes.
It was toast.
Yeah, trying to just get toast.
Yeah, right. Oh, my God. It's just, it's so freaking bizarre. I've been getting some language coaching, too. You remember I was complaining about I don't know how to say all those words, and I say them wrong and whatever.
Right, and then they say, you know, you sound just like Sarah Palin.
Oh, I'm really working on that, and every once in a while I'll catch myself and I'll say, oh, that was a Sarah Palin thing, and they, uh-huh. And anyway, I was talking the other morning, I had something about catfish or something, and I said Belzoni, and she said, it's Belzona. And I said, well, Fagan calls it Belzoni, and she said, well, I don't care how he says it, the way we say it. So it's not, if the town is not Belzoni, it's Belzona.
Belzona, mm-hmm.
Mississippi, mm-hmm.
I understand.
Yes, I understand. And the other morning, there's these little snapshots that I take in my head that I can't get rid of them. My friend goes in to get a carton of cigarettes, hands her credit card to, left her purse in the car, hands her credit card to the old boy in the little local country corner store on the highway, and he says, got some ID? I can't do the dialect. I'm not even going to try. Got some ID? And she said, I left it out of my purse. And he said, he looks at the credit card and he says, what's the name on this card? And she told him, and he said, is that you? And she said, yes, sir. And he said, okay. Then she said, you're not even going to check my ID. He said, nope, if you know the name on the card, that's you.
That's a level of security that you seldom see anywhere. Even just wanting to know what the name is. Hey, it's a card. You swipe it. If it says okay, go.
It presumed that she could read. I guess. I don't know. He couldn't read. I don't know. It was awful. Anyway, and the other day I was asking. We have a new person on the staff who came from a FEMA crew, and she was there, and then they started cutting the crew back, and according to Washington's dictates and mandates and criteria. Anyway, we picked her up, and I was asking her the other day about, you know, the difference. I mean, I know the difference, but I'm explaining to the audience. There's the FEMA trailers were one thing, and then Mississippi has a contract with FEMA or somebody. Anyway, to get them out of the FEMA trailers, some people were eligible for what's called a MEMA cottage. That's Mississippi Emergency blah blah something, MEMA.
Right.
And so they are nothing more than painted park models. I mean, sometimes they're orange and they're salmon and pretty colors, you know, nice soft yellow, pretty colors. They're still freaking trailers, and they've got the wheels on them, and they're tied down with, they're lashed down to the ground, you know, with the straps and all that stuff. And so you see MEMA cottages all over, and some of them down in Hancock County, down by Waveland and Pas Christian, got drowned in the last storm, whichever storm, Gus, I guess it was, came in and drowned them. They had another 13-foot storm surge. And the FEMA cottages and the people who were left in FEMA trailers, MEMA cottages and FEMA trailers all melted. I mean, they just blew all over and whatever. So I asked this woman, what about the MEMA cottages? Do people get them for, are the people who are in them, do they get them for free, rent free, or do they have to pay for them? Or they started doing that before I left last year, and I'm not quite sure about what all the criteria is. And she tells me they get them for a year contract, and if they want to buy them, they can buy them after a year if they're in a trailer park where they can stay parked. Or if they're on private property in the city limits of a city that will allow them to be, to keep the cottage. Some cities don't want the cottages in their city limits. Okay. So after a year, they can buy it and stay in them if the city will allow it. Okay. I sort of knew that. I said, what about the ones that melted down in Waveland? And she said, well, they get a new one. And I said, oh, okay, well then, but the year doesn't start over. So if they had 1 month left, lost their belongings and the MEMA cottage, they get a new one for a month, and then they have to find appropriate housing. Well, that's kind of what we're doing, is finding housing for disabled and elderly. But anyway, I said, God, wouldn't it have been easier? And she's just looking at me smiling, and I said, well, where are these manufactured? Are they like in Arkansas or Indiana, or, you know, where do they come from? And she said, Bat and I didn't blink, didn't crack a smile. Haley Barber's brother-in-law. And I said, oh, you sure know how to stop a conversation. Oh,
dead in its tracks. And with that, Kate, let's with the understanding of your previous reference, let's go to where that's taking you, okay?
Plain omelet, no potatoes, tomatoes instead, a cup of coffee, and wheat toast.
No substitution.
What do you mean, you don't have any tomatoes?
Only what's on the menu. You can have a number two, a plain omelet. It comes with cottage fries and rolls.
Yeah, I know what it comes with, but it's not what I want.
Well, I'll come back when you make up your mind.
Wait a minute. I have made up my mind. I'd like a plain omelet, no potatoes on the plate, a cup of coffee, and a side order of wheat toast.
I'm sorry, we don't have any side orders of toast. I'll give you an English muffin or a coffee roll.
What do you mean you don't make side orders of toast? You make sandwiches, don't you?
Would you like to talk to the manager?
Hey, Mac.
Shut up. You've got bread. And a toaster of some kind?
I don't make the rules.
Okay, I'll make it as easy for you as I can. I'd like an omelet, plain, and a chicken salad sandwich on wheat toast. No mayonnaise, no butter, no lettuce, and a cup of coffee.
And number two, chicken salad sand. All the butter, the lettuce, the mayonnaise, and a cup of coffee. Anything else?
Yeah, now all you have to do is hold the chicken, bring me the toast, give me a check for the chicken salad sandwich, and you haven't broken any rules.
You want me to hold the chicken, huh?
I want you to hold it between your knees.
You see that sign, sir? Yes, you all have to leave. I'm not taking any more of your smartness and sarcasm.
You see this sign?
Fantastic that you could figure that out.
Is that what you were talking about?
Yeah. That's what my desk feels like every single day.
Just the arm just right across.
Yeah. And the other day I lost it. Somebody laid a piece of paper on my desk, and it's about Christmas time and Toys for Tots and from the Salvation Army. I guess it's Toys for Tots. I don't know who that is.
That's the Marines.
Whatever. And then in the little block off to the side, it said you need to apply for the program. You need to have, and they went down the list, and it was birth certificate for everyone in the family, proof of income. Just like applying for
8x10 color glossy photograph with circles and aerographs, circles and arrows, and a paragraph on the back of each one.
I started reading it aloud, and the office was kind of quiet, and then everybody got quiet, and they're listening, and I started laughing. I said, "You mean you have to go through all of this just to get toys for your youngins for Christmas?" And we've had to do that for you. And I just started laughing. The irony was just too much for me to handle. And I couldn't stop laughing. And I got really worried. I thought, is this hysteria? I'm going to start crying any minute. I'm going to start swiping things off the desk. I don't know. I wouldn't throw the computer. It's my little laptop. I just couldn't stop laughing. What you have to go through to get toys for your kids. I mean, free toys for your kids.
Well, you know, but they ain't nothing free, and you know that. So what we're going to do is we're going to make sure that the poor people are reminded that they are, by God, poor.
Mm-hmm.
And we're gonna make them abase themselves and debase themselves and humiliate themselves.
That's right.
Just to keep their children from bawling on Christmas because this culture has inundated them for the last 6 weeks with the fact that they will be something less than human if they don't have a commercial orgy on December the 25th. Sorry.
All wrapped up with ribbon. Yep. And I want to thank you the other day. I haul my own water, and I was filling my jugs, and a gentleman was out there, and he and I got to talking, and he said, how you today, ma'am? And I said, oh, I'm better than I ought to be. And he said, yeah, we all got problems. I mean, and he started in, and he just needed to talk. And so I just let him, and I asked, when he acted like he was going to stop talking, I would ask another question that would prompt more conversation or in more in depth. And he was in Moss Point, my little low-income black neighborhood across the tracks. He got about 6 foot of water in his new trailer, and he didn't have insurance on it, and FEMA only reimbursed him for the belongings in the house, and he couldn't get a loan, and he couldn't do this, and they, and he's got a good job with the high school, was the maintenance guy for the bus comp, the bus school buses for the high school, and he was just going on. I mean, it was awful, and he was talking about his health problems, and he said, well, I've got diabetes and I've got gout. And I said, and you just can't seem to eat right. And he said, no, ma'am. They told me I had diabetes and I've been doing pretty good. I lost 80 pounds. And I said, oh, my God. And I only lost 50. And he looked at me kind of grinned and I said, but ain't we beautiful? And he said, yes, ma'am.
Well, see, you got to be careful, Kate. When you run around opening doors, don't be surprised when people walk through them.
No, I was wonderful. But when I was feeling so... After I walked away from the conversation, he said, well, I don't know who you are, ma'am, but I'm, and he introduced himself, and I said, I'm Kate, and he said, well, you have a blessed day, Miss Kate, and I said, oh, there really is, and I left there feeling really hopeless. I mean, he's got an apartment, he's got a layabout lazy son, 40 years old, he put through college to learn to weld, and he's just laying around watching TV, and, you know, it was just so sad, and what, well, this ties into you. You said to me one time, Kate, there's always going to be a paraplegic with a wheelchair that doesn't have a battery. You're always going to have a paraplegic without a battery in his wheelchair. And I thought, as I drove away from the water store, I thought, there's always going to be Mr. over in Moss Point living in the apartment with the raggedy son, with gout and with diabetes and just having a bunch of trouble. There's always going to be one. They're everywhere. So... thanks for that reminder. There's always going to be a paraplegic with no, with a.
But that's not, you know, that's not a negative.
No, I know that. I know that. That just that they just sort of, you know, and the point I was making with him is, everything we're all talking about how the rebuild and everything's going up. We got a brand new Waffle House. We got, you know, all the businesses. A lot of businesses are coming back. It all looks pretty shiny, and the economy totally sucks. But you couldn't tell it by the way people are shopping.
That's because the economy is scattered, smothered, and covered.
Oh, you betcha, honey. With a double.
Yeah.
Oh, don't even go in there without eating double hash browns. Oh, my God.
Oh, scattered, smothered, and covered, baby. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, dice.
See, I can never hear the words Waffle House now without thinking of the late, great Bill Hicks describing walking into a Waffle House somewhere near Nashville and having the waitress walk up to him as he read his book and say, what's she reading for? Bless his heart, Bill Hicks said, I've been asked what I'm reading on any number of occasions, but I've never been asked what I'm reading for.
Oh, I'm looking for a translation of this menu.
Big old trucker sitting not too far and leans over and says, looks like we got us a reader.
Ooh.
Yeah, but Bill Hicks was from the Deep South, too.
Mm-hmm.
Alabama, Texas.
Yeah.
And, you know, spoke the language. So, you know, just recognizing these things. Well, I'm glad there's a shiny new Waffle House down there.
Well, but that doesn't, I mean, what I was telling the mister was that that's all wonderful, but people like you and the grandma with the leaking roof every time it rains, that people aren't paying any attention to them. And he said, no, ma'am. And...
well, that's the reason I said what I did about, you know, there's always somebody needing something, because, Kate, that's not an accident. That is the world that we have created.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We have created there's a balance for every destitute Wall Street banker who's down to three limousines. There's a misbegotten human being in southern Mississippi with a layabout, with a no good layabout son and 6 feet of water in his trailer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're in my life, and that's just, I guess I keep coming back here and I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you what, I mean, I'm not, well, maybe I'm out of line, but I'd rather be hanging out and talking to the people you're hanging out and talking to than to talk to one of those Wall Street bankers who's worried about his next billion.
Oh, well, I...
Because they're decidedly dull people.
That goes without saying, I'm not even interested in them. Where I'm living, she just insisted that I have a TV hookup, and I said, but honey, I don't watch TV. I mean, I can't even stand TV. Well, you just gotta have a TV. So we went and bought a cable and dropped it into the trailer, and I have Dish, and it's got so freaking many channels, I can't even remember where I was at the last time.
No, you have an existential crisis just trying to figure out what to watch.
Right, and so I just listened to Malloy. But what I found Link.
Yeah, now that
I
is.
I had no idea. TV without the world without borders, and I haven't taken it off of the channel, and so I don't know. I just listened to, when I heard the, listened to the archives from yesterday and on the horn, and the fellow who called in from Greece, it was Greece, wasn't it?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, he reminded me of Zeb, my friend from Poland, and they're so well spoken and so into what's going on in the United States, and when I watch Link, they use different adjectives to describe things. You know, it's just, the language is all the same, but the way they're describing an event is decidedly non-American. It's not negative, but it's just a different slant, and I try to catch what it was they said that was so different, but I go on to the name, and most of it I'm reading the translation on the screen, so I get, you know, I have to pay really close attention, but it's really nice to watch. So I'm not even, that's why I wasn't even willing to talk about politics, because I'm not even paying any attention to what's going on here from the media perspective. And I don't have anybody to talk to about big ideas and dialogue with people about big stuff, you know, because it's mostly what's for supper, you know.
hierarchy of needs stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What's for supper it really is topic one.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And my grandma who was going to cook me black eyed peas, she's taken the menu down, but I'm thinking that rather than do that, I wanted her to give me a couple of slips of her plants that are growing. She's got philodendrons and a bunch of stuff growing outside in her front yard that's just like weeds. I mean, people baby and nurture and played with those plants, those house plants. Hers are just going out, just vines are running all up and down the steps and stuff. I went out and saw the hills that her brother planted for her, and she wants me to come over and help her pick the greens, and oh my God. And she gave me a sweet potato pie, and she said, well, here, just have a piece of pie. And I started to cut it, and it was frozen, and she said, well, just take half of it. And it ain't no good. I mean, it just didn't spice up like I wanted it to. I can't talk burnt corn, Alabama, but with no teeth. But Grandma is telling me that
it's no good. It ain't hardly fit to eat.
It's not right. it ain't like I spice it, you know. And so, but we'll take half of it. Then I was okay. So she finally said, "Just take it all. Just take it all." She wrapped it back up, and I took it home, and it was undoubtedly. Celestial. I mean, it was
food porn.
All right. It was just, oh God, it was awful. Oh, it was just.
You suffered through the whole thing, didn't you, Kate?
No, actually, I just ate one little piece and left it for the rest of the community. And there's a mom. I mean, there's my friend and her father and the daughter, and then the daughter's friends and people traipsing in and out of the house. I just left it in the refrigerator. And yeah, you know, I brought home some sweet potato pie. Anybody want it? It's yours. So
sweet potato pie.
Made by Miss Exie. Oh my God.
I know, and you know, when I do get home, old home, my neighbor, without fail, she'll come over and ask if Agnes is with me, because she said, I know she loves my sweet potato pie. I said, I love your sweet potato pie too. And I know.
She's still alive, huh?
Oh yeah. Last I heard. Yep.
Bless her heart.
Bless her heart.
Yeah, well, I've been spending my days and my hours doing files and little bitty bookkeeping numbers, little twos and little fives, and just doing little bitty hurt my eyes kind of stuff. And then I take my dangerous music and strap it onto my body and go down. We have a brand new pier here, and it's about four times back and forth on the pier is about a mile. And I just strap on my music and my headphones and just my sunglasses, and I walk out over the water about 10, 15 feet up over the water and just get walk. So, you know, so anyway, there's something to be said about living in the South.
Lots to be said for it.
Lots to be said, yeah. It must be because I keep coming back, you know.
Well, hey, by the way, I know you said you were listening to the archive the other day, Kate. Not that this is any kind of Pulitzer Prize-winning photography or anything. It's damn fine photography. In the course of shooting the video, our good buddy Michael took some snaps, and I wasn't meaning to demean his work by any stretch of the imagination. What I'm trying to say is I'm not trying to be an egomaniac about sending people to the website. There we go. Now, okay, have I extracted foot from mouth? There we go.
You can be an egomaniac. It's your freaking show, okay?
That's still embarrassing, even if it is, because it's our show.
Yeah. It's my show. What about the web page? I didn't go there.
Yeah, okay,
I didn't
right.
see the pictures.
Yeah, go and see the
about.
Pictures. Just click on photo gallery, and you'll see because you got me thinking about, you know, down there, and then I'm thinking about back up here. And you can see my little town nestled there in the loving embrace of the mountains. And then you can also see what they're doing to the mountains that used to do the embracing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if anybody down there is curious in the midst of their misery, let them know we're thinking about them.
Well, yeah, and every time I walk past the light that's on, I think, well, there's another lump of coal. Mm.
Yeah.
But I don't dare bring it up where I'm at because it's not a... It's too political, and
well, you know, it's like my favorite line from that great John Sayles film, Mate One.
Mm-hmm.
All we got in common is our misery.
Mm-hmm.
So the least as we can do is share it.
Yeah, I was pretty self-absorbed before I started listening to the program tonight because I was listening to Lee Seat Moon. He's got a new book.
Does he really?
Yes, he does. And he was on an hour-long interview this afternoon, and it's a nonfiction again. It's a travel. He's remarried. I think I heard from him about 3 years ago. He said, you know, I got married again. And I'm like, no. Anyway, he's just took little short trips. I mean, there's longer miles in total, but short trips, you know, with a kind of an agenda. And he and his wife are traveling together, and he explained the differences between traveling alone and with someone, and, you know, and how the conversations get started. And anyway,
it's a whole nother dynamic, no doubt about it.
Oh yeah, yeah, right. And I never could do it like he did it. I mean, when I'm out on the road, I can't do what he did and what he does because the white girl just don't walk into a bar, you know, by myself with foreign northern plates on, you know, I mean, just don't go there. So my trips are always different. My road time is quite a bit different than his, but anyway, it was good to hear him, and I just want to let you know he's...
Well, shoot me the title as soon as you know it, and we'll work on getting him on here.
Oh, that'd be great. Oh, God, that'd be great.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I guess I could just, it sounded, he's on a book tour today. They were talking from Seattle, but.
Hello, Cleveland. Yeah, I know.
He would eventually get my mail. I mean, if they're probably going back home after this book tour, so he'd get my letter, my mail, and I would.
Well, shoot me the title, and I'll find the publisher, find the publicist, and we'll work it from that angle, too.
Okay, yeah, I never think about going that route. I just call the guy myself. I mean, I don't have his phone number, but, I mean, I could just write to him myself and say, hey, so, yeah, that's a good
Because, I mean, you know, we all know I'm a fan.
Yeah.
From Blue Highways to River Horse to Prairie Earth.
Mm-hmm.
To, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Well, I don't have any kicker tonight. I like my Mima Cottage is that Marsha's. I did say I went and got after she said Haley Barber's brother-in-law, and I said, oh, and I walked away, and I went and got a cup of coffee, and I come back out and said, would that be his sister's husband?
or Marcia's brother? And she said, Marcia's brother. And I just stopped. I said, God, it's a family affair. I just stopped.
I know.
Everybody gets involved. It's a big old family down here. My God, and I never know who I'm talking to. So I don't talk much. I just mostly hang out in places like this, and on Link TV is before I fall asleep, so whatever. So anyway, my love to the family, and I hope they're all as well. And Bush taking Obama's through the White House freaked me out.
Yeah, a little bit.
Creeped me right out. Only Malloy made a point of pointing out the fact that Obama laid hands on Bush to let him know who's the big dog, and I got your ass, and your history, and I'm the man now, and you're out of here, white boy. But I said that.
Well, did you notice that they have been given their Secret Service code names?
No.
Yeah, Obama is Renegade.
Renegade, Renegade is leaving the building.
Oh, my God.
Michelle is Renaissance. Renaissance. Oh, Renaissance is in the automobile.
Nobody can spell it, though, but it works.
Right. Okay. One of the daughters is Rosebud.
Ooh.
Yeah. But I had this whole list.
God.
I got it here. Hang on a minute.
Those literary illusions are awful.
You noticed, huh?
No, oh, my God. Rosebud.
Rosebud.
Oh, my God. And Renegade? Oh, shit. That's awful.
Oh, but there's more. I gotta find out the other dog.
I know. I'm waiting on your page to come up off of your million things on your desktop.
Too many tabs.
How many windows do you have open?
About 25.
I know.
On two separate computers. Yeah, Renegade, Renaissance, Malia is Radiance, and Sasha is Rosebud. Joe Biden is Celtic. Jill Biden is Capri. Yeah.
Decidedly white.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now what's... Yeah. Yeah, that wasn't lost on you either. I can't get anything past you. But what I find interesting, this was a little just puff piece from the Chicago Tribune, and they list a bunch of other people's past presidential families' handles, Secret Service handles. Bill Clinton was Eagle. Hillary was Evergreen. Chelsea was Energy. The first George Bush was Timberwolf, and Barbara was Tranquility. Jimmy Carter was Deacon. Rosalind was Dancer. George W. Bush is Tumblr. And Laura is Tempo. What's interesting here is they go through this whole list. There's no mention of what Dick Cheney's was.
Because he owns the Secret Service. They can't name him.
Yeah, I guess Dick Cheney's is just our dark lord.
Daddy. The boss. Blackwater.
Vader. What do you want to bet it really is Vader?
I don't know. I don't even care. Is he still alive? Oh, God.
I know.
Anyway, when he was, I'm hooking showing the bedroom to the Lincoln bedroom. I thought that was something about that, and then I found out that's where the girls are going to live and showing bedrooms and... Anyway, you got some kind of music there that Bush showing bedrooms. I mean, our babies coming home and dead babies and dead kids and bedrooms and what Bush isn't paying any attention to, and we don't get to see the bodies and we don't get to see the caskets and whatever. You got any? Just bump me out with something really.
Just based on what we were just talking about, I know what I'm bumping with.
Okay, right. Whatever. I get to go home for supper now. I was waiting to get in and.
Well, bon appetit, Miss Kate.
Yeah.
terrifying.
Angler, angler. Cheney is angler.
Ooh. Oh, rather than a shotgun, it's a fishing pole. Okay.
Yeah, right.
You can catch a whole bunch of big fish, little fish, whatever. Speaking of fish, I want to go home and eat. I got to be back in 12 hours. Hold the chicken. I'll turn the speakers back up. And
hold the chicken. All right, Kate.
I'm out of here.
Take care, dear.
I got work to do. Take care.
All right. Later.
Bye.
Bye. And that is our pal, Kate, on the Gulf Coast. You know I got to do this, right? You're going to forgive me, I hope. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Oh, mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law. Lawman is putting end to my running and I'm so far from my home. Oh, mama, I can hear you a-crying, you're so scared and all alone. Hangman is coming down from the gallows and I don't have very long.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Brock.
Sometimes I utterly despise how my mind works. But I saw that story, I guess, last night about the new Secret Service handle. And, you know, I'm an old DJ. I went, Renegade? 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 And I listened to that, and I thought, wait a minute. Because one of the things that, well, it's noted in the article, and one of the things that with the whole nicknaming the first family thing that the Secret Service does is that the name choosing is kind of esoteric and, shall we say, pithy. And I saw Renegade, and I thought, sorry bastards. Sorry, stinking, rotten bastards. And then I went and listened to that song. I did it last night. And I heard that line. You know what? Do you know what the line is in that song that pissed me off? Now, this isn't about the fact that, you know, Styx, just as sort of late 70s corporate rock, is kind of loathsome anyway. Domo Arigato, Mr. Roboto. Oh, my God. You know, if a bar band trying to get a record contract produced that crap, they wouldn't even be playing in a bar. But that's what happened with corporate rock in the late 70s, early 80s. REO Styx Journey Wagon. You know what I mean? There is one line, and I personally think it's why the Secret Service chose that nickname, that code name, for Barack Obama. There is one line in that song. Because, you see, as I've tried to make it clear, and I think I have made it clear, there is still just a gut-busting level of racism in this country. I mean, he's not a renegade. I mean, maybe it was whatever letter they choose for the president, the other names have to begin with that same letter too. So, hence, George W. Bush is Tumblr. I don't think it's because he falls down. He started falling down after the Secret Service started protecting him. I think it's probably because that's what he drinks his liquor in. And Laura Bush is Tempo. Most of the pithiness is attached to the selection of the name for the president. And it reminds me of the days when I was in a fraternity. And no, we didn't do any hazing. But you know, the newbies all had nicknames. We all had nicknames throughout the house. And I won't tell you what mine was. But, you know, the new guys, there was a little naming ceremony, and there was a keg involved, and harmless good fun. And we had a guy who looked like Ernie from My Three Sons. And so his pledge nickname was Ernie. And we all had great good fun, among other things, doing our Uncle Charlie impression. He'd walk in from class, and we'd all yell, Ernie, get that tramp out of here! Because, you remember, My Three Sons, the dog's name was Tramp, and Uncle Charlie was forever on to Ernie for letting the dog in the house. Until the one night when we saw our brother go back into his room, close the door, and somebody hollered, Ernie, get that tramp out of here! And this beautiful young woman came out of the room in tears. And ran out. Yeah. But everybody got a nickname. We had one of my dearest brothers was, his name was Mr. Peabody. Named after the cartoon character. But there would always be some sort of cultural reference that brought about the nicknaming. I mean, nicknames don't just exist in a vacuum. And there is one line in that Styx song, and you can't tell me that veteran Secret Service professionals of roughly my age
We're not sitting around listening to Styx eons ago. Do you know what the line is? And do you know why I am pissed off? Yeah, we'll find out. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
What's up, Gene?
Funny you should mention the CIA and the law enforcement and music, or something like that.
Yeah.
So last night, right? And I know I suppose it's really kind of mundane when you hear what it was, but it would just freak me out. I was kind of relaxed. And I turned on some pagan music because I have a thing for pagan music. That's just me, right?
Sure.
So I'm listening away, and the commercial comes on, and wouldn't you know, it starts out, do you thrive in ambiguous situations? Do you like a sense of adventure? Then give us a call. I'll apply at the National Clandestine Agency. The voice comes on, if you'd like to learn more, please check us up on the web at CIA.gov. And I was out there, I was sitting there listening for a few hours, and about every other commercial break they had it in there. And then it's funny, I was looking at the player, and wouldn't you know, they sponsored it. You know, they were sponsoring the program. This is on, another radio, a digital radio service, which you can probably guess what it was, but it has something to do with the year. It just freaked me out because it's like, you know, I don't remember. It's like, didn't we have an election? It's like that. I guess I'm paranoid or something. It's like.
No. Paranoia is the irrational fear that people are out to get you. No. I don't think you're being irrational.
What do we got? 69 days, and I haven't checked the counter, so it's 69 days and some time left, but it's like, and of course,
69 days, 15 hours, 50 minutes, and 50 seconds.
Oh, but who's counting?
We are!
I'll be so damn glad when it's gone, but, you know, it's weird because believe me, I hate to say that, I'm not sure what that line is in Styx that pisses you off.
Well, I'm not gonna give it away yet.
That's fine.
If you just look up the lyric to the song, you'll get it. It'll just leap off the screen at you.
I'm sure, but you know, I've been reading all the political junk, and of course, now there's a Salon article over there, and I haven't read it yet, but the title is basically "The Republicans Went Home Fist to Go Damn Light," and. Oy vey. And they'll probably get some poor sucker that'll think, well, you know, the.
No, but I think in the long run, the Republican Party, Gene, is just going to get nuttier.
Oh, I'm sure. But in the meantime, what they'll probably, you know, they're trying so damned hard to get their feet back in that trough for one more 4-year term because it's like, what I don't want to see is all the work we did and just basically that we're not really going anywhere. I mean, I kind of agree with Alan that called in from Wisconsin. I mean, we're so far right. If we turned left, we'd be lucky if we back on the curve of the road. I mean, it's...
We go any further right in this country and we'll see our own butts.
Oh, God. Yeah, we're going to fall right off the edge of the earth. But I just had to throw that in with the CIA sponsoring the music because it's like that's pagan music. It's like that's about as far away from traditional family values as you could probably get. It was nutty. So anyway, I will let you get back to your thing, but I just had to call in and. Throw that out at you because it was just weird.
CIA recruiting on satellite. What? Huh?
Yeah. CIA recruiting on interwebs radio. And it's like, jeez. I mean, it was funny because I shut it down for a minute. I rebooted the I rebooted the player, and it was like, oh, great, we get a Catbox commercial now, and I'll be damned. 5 minutes later, it went right back to the CIA. I want the Catbox.
Yeah, kind of, well, yeah. In a way, it makes me yearn for, bring back the Buy Gold Now ads.
Yeah, I mean, I just want the cat box. I like cats.
Tidy cat. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, something. But no, I get, you thrive in ambiguous situations. It's like, God, no.
Oh, now you got me halfway tempted to apply, but I'm too old.
Who knows, man? I figured, you know, because it was a national clandestine service, or I think. Yeah, that was it. National clandestine service. Like, boy, is that the domestic spy agency we're supposed to be getting? Or we were supposed to get under.
Would you want anybody working for the CIA that was of the same caliber that responds to patent baldness remedy ads?
Well, probably not, because I think they've probably got a lot of them now. So, I don't, although it's not for domestic operations, I guess not. Anyway, oh, God, I'm going to go get a drink. I'll talk to you later.
I don't blame you. Have one for me.
All right, sure.
Later, Gene. Bye now. News Ninja Gene, the man who reads the Internet every day. CIA ads on the radio, right there with the cat box ads. Brother. Hey, I want to, I said I wanted to kind of get to something this evening before we bailed out. The right wing, as Mark Levine noted in his program, and as I'm about to argue as well, while a sane political party would look at why they just got gut stomped and re-examine their position and take a look at their tactical and strategic and policy failings, that's what a sane political party who was put out in the cold would do. But we're talking about the Repiglican Party. And they are not likely to engage in that kind of, they don't like to do that. They don't like to philosophize because they are convinced they have a mandate. Never mind voting. God wants us to rule you. So they're going to get weirder. That right wing idiot Laura Ingraham sort of proved that earlier, having a hissy on CNN's on her own show. Laura Ingraham having a hissy about Arnold Schwarzenegger's his recommendation to the Republican Party that they not get stuck in ideology, in the ideological corners, and saying, let's clean our ocean, let's clean our water, let's clean our air, let's create health care reform, let's pass the budget, let's fix the budget deficit and the structural deficit. That just pissed off Laura Ingraham to no end.
Here's the problem with Schwarzenegger. Are you ready for this story? I appreciate the call. It's not on the printer. He's now in this interview with CNN yesterday. He's urging the GOP to move beyond ideology. Listen to this. In the wake of crushing defeats for Republicans in the last week's national elections, Governor Schwarzenegger said Sunday that his party should regroup by moving away from some of its core conservative principles and embracing spending on programs that Americans want. I think the important thing for the Republican Party is now to also look at other issues that are very important for this country and not get stuck in ideology. Let's go and talk about health care reform. Let's go and fund programs, if they're necessary programs, and not just get stuck on the fiscal responsibility. Oh, my God. Arnold Schwarzenegger is embarrassing on so many levels. Number one, it's time to lose the Speedo bathing suit that you wear when you vacation in Mexico, because that is a train wreck picture. I don't want to see that. Number two, I do not want to hear from a Republican governor who pushed through $6 billion of spending for stem cell research a few years ago. That was a really smart move, Arnold. Great move. Now your government is suffering from a huge deficit, and you're pushing more spending? This is what you think is a good idea? This is precisely why Republicans lose. It's this attitude.
Good idea, science.
I've never, never, ever gotten the whole Schwarzenegger thing. I've never gotten it. And yeah, in the beginning, when it looked like his he was the only one who was going to be able to deliver us from Gray Skies Davis, then I thought, well, but I'm telling you, every time we look to moderate to liberal Republicans for answers, we're disappointed. Not only are we disappointed, we end up getting shafted. And you listen to this advice, and we will be a minority party.
Schwarzenegger
urges GOP to move beyond ideology. I read this, and my blood boils. Left Coast? I mean, just secede already at this point. Okay, secede already. I can't take it anymore from California. And everyone listening on KGIL and Z-Surf and our stations up and down the coast, I mean, you know, we love you, but come on. We gotta rescue this Republican Party, and not by the squishiness of the so-called hard body Schwarzenegger.
Nope. They're gonna rescue the pig-licking party by, well, it's the equivalent of taking a drowning man and throwing him an anchor. That's how Laura Ingraham wants to rescue the pig-licking party. Sorry about all that audio, but she just goes on and on in that god-awful nasal voice made for print kind of. Yuck. They pay that? Ugh, go figure. But anyway, so this is where the right wing is. So now we go over to the brother of Flush Flemball. Flush Flemball, wouldn't you hate to be David Limbaugh? David Flemball? Just constantly having to live in the shadow of your bilious, pustle-gutted brother. Being the other Limbaugh. You know he's got a little quiet room somewhere where he just shuts the door and weeps and writes on the wall with a purple crayon between his toes. But because he's Flush Flemball's brother, they give him a column at one of those right-wing news so-called news sites. It's just, you know, it's a big opinion dump. The most unnerving aspects about the Democrats' sweeping November 4th victory are their intolerance for dissent and their willingness to censor and otherwise suppress their opponents. Really? You just published that, David. And you'll go on publishing this bilge. We keep hearing that Sarah Palin's criticism of Obama for palling around with terrorists increased death threats against him, which is bogus in the extreme. Really. But consistent with the inveterate liberal tactic of chilling conservative speech by saying it incites violence. Shh. David. Liberals didn't say that. The Secret Service said that. Now, if you want to go out there and argue that the Secret Service is a bunch of liberals who just named their new security charge codename Renegade from a song that has the line in it, "The jig is up," you go ahead and argue how liberal they are, David.
The Secret Service warned the Obama family in mid-October that they had seen a dramatic increase in the number of threats against the Democratic candidate coinciding with Mrs. Palin's attacks.
The Secret Service, David Limbaugh! The Secret damn Service!
The Obama campaign complained to the Department of Justice about the American Issues Project's ad tying Obama to William Ayers.
Well, duh! John Kerry didn't complain about the bogus Swift boat attack on him. Look where it got him.
As we all know, William Ayers did what William Ayers did when Barack Obama was 8! But never let that slow down a wingnut. Obama supporters flooded Chicago radio station WGN with harassing calls during its interviews of conservative writers investigating Obama. Really? They were harassing calls? Or were they calls by people saying, you know, this is just kind of disgusting. This is revolting. This is embarrassing. This isn't journalism. Obama has made no secret of his plan to pass card check legislation, which some have described as the most radical revision of labor law since 1935.
Students of the language, shall we get the little dry erase board out and diagram that sentence? The most radical revision of labor law since 1935. So that implies that in 1935 there was a radical revision of labor law. Do you know what that labor law was in 1935? It was a law that specifically gave the right to organize to working people in this country. But to a fascist thug like David Limbaugh, that's radical!
It would permit unions to eliminate secret ballots, which would represent a radical blow to democratic principles.
No, it wouldn't. See, that's the thing. The Employees' Free Choice Act has language in it that would allow workers to organize their workplace via what is called a card check agreement. Current labor law allows for card check agreements, but only if the employer permits it. This levels the playing field so that if the employees want it, they can have it. Oh, they can still do the secret ballot thing that's on, you know, that forces workers to organize their workplace with one foot in a bucket. Sure, they can still do that. Radical, radical, radical.
A radical blow to democratic principles.
Well, daggum, David Limbaugh, then what the hell was suspending habeas corpus?
Well, it was protecting America in the war on terror.
See, they're going to get weirder.
Democrats fully intend to reinstitute the Fairness Doctrine, a euphemistically named regulation aimed at shutting down conservative talk radio, which Senator Chuck Schumer has compared to pornography.
Well, you know, when conservative talkers like Glenn Beck refer to people like Hillary Clinton as the stereotypical bitch, I think that's pretty, well, you know, I'd say it's obscene, not pornographic. When G. Gordon Liddy, goes on the air and says that all the white people will be fed collard greens at Barack Obama's re-education camps, I think that's pretty obscene. David Limbaugh, when your brother Flush, the oxymoron, gets on the air and tells an African-American caller to call him back when he gets the bone out of his nose, that's pretty obscene.
Fairness Doctrine. Oh, my God.
Go to hell, David Limbaugh. But he doesn't have to go. That's where he's going to take the Republican Party. I believe this arrogant attitude... Oh, wait, back up. Remember that conservatives have never advocated government action to suppress or censor the liberal media monopoly. Liberal media monopoly? Yeah, because all those liberal companies own all the radio stations. That's why all those liberals are out there on the air every day, David Limbaugh. Which is the liberal media monopoly, which has existed for decades and still dominates mainstream media today. Really? Where? Did you just call Rupert Murdoch and Roger Ailes a liberal? Did you just call CBS liberal? Did you just call NBC, owned by General Electric, the single largest profiteer and bomb maker, the greatest contributor to the destruction of homes and families in South Asia? Did you just call GE liberal, David? I think you're a little bit crazy. Their answer was the alternative media. That's us. But what is even more frightening than the sinister schemes of liberal politicians to silence and criminalize political opposition? Where is there anything that anything anywhere that suggests that anybody is going to be criminalized for being for political opposition? Dang. Is the apparent eagerness of rank-and-file liberals to go along with them, as witnessed by the many examples I've cited and numerous gleeful emails I get taunting me about the imminent reinvocation of the Fairness Doctrine. Okay, David, show them. Just show me those. Just bring out those numerous gleeful emails. Publish them. We're waiting. Ain't gonna happen. I believe this arrogant attitude can largely be traced to the top-down indoctrination in our schools, cultural institutions, and media that liberalism is morally superior because it is tolerant, diverse, intellectual, and enlightened. Well, that is why liberalism is morally superior. I mean, there you are, the little terrified gerbil thing that you are, David Limbaugh. Let's see, you're afraid of the Arabs, and you're afraid of the Pakistanis, and you're afraid of the Iranians, and you're scared of the liberals, and then the French. So you're not intellectual. You've proven that by your column. Your idea of diversity is to have lots of white people in your party with different colored hair. Your concept of tolerance is not openly advocating the murder of people you disagree with, but just doing so quietly. Enlightened? Conservatism? Enlightened? The two definitions counter each other. They are parts of a Venn diagram that never touch, enlightened and conservatism. At least not conservatism the way you define it. Dear God. So that's what we're going to get for the next 4 years. That's what you can look for. This view holds that conservative expression doesn't deserve constitutional protection. Nobody's ever shut down conservative expression. We want you to talk more, David, because the more you talk, the more insane it obviously appears you are. Because conservatism is inherently evil. No, you're not inherently evil. You're inherently stupid. This self-blinding superior mindset explains how liberals can accuse conservatives of racism for their legitimate political differences with Barack Obama, while demeaning with racist epithets Condoleezza Rice or Clarence Thomas. Not hardly. Nobody's running around in Klan robes with a picture of Clarence Thomas. There are no liberal skinheads out there plotting to assassinate Condoleezza Rice while wearing a white top hat and tails, David Limbaugh.
This is what you can. This is what you're going to get for 4 years. Saddle up, liberals.
And you know that's one. That is one thing that happened with this election. I really think once and for all, nobody's buying that the word liberal means bad anymore. Or at least nobody that matters. You know, the 20%ers, the dead enders, they still do.
But they're going to be so obvious. It's going to be like. It's going to be like whistling, I don't know, it's going to be like whistling at a groundhog. You ever been out in the country and you've seen a groundhog? You know, you can stand and go, and whistle, and the groundhog will stand up and look around. That's why in some parts of the country, they call them whistle pigs. Every time, without fail, I don't whistle so good anymore. At least not into a microphone.
Whistle and up stands the whistle pig. And that's the same way it's going to be with right wingers from here for the next 4 years. All you're going to have to do is say Barney Frank, and they'll stand up and say he caused the housing crisis. And you just kind of, yeah, you're one of those. And then you know you don't have to talk to them anymore because they're morons.
Or, you know, you say something like, I read today where Nancy Pelosi!
There you go. Just go back and lick the bus window for a while there, right winger. We're busy fixing America.
Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Gerard from Almost Blue, Indiana.
Almost Blue!
Well, that's in my book. We still got Bush's former budget director as our governor.
Yeah, Mitch Daniels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we did well. I've been wanting to call you since the election and just... The thing about the groundhogs, I happen to have some groundhogs in my backyard on the property here, and you know, the groundhogs actually whistle to each other. They make a sound when danger comes around. They'll whistle to each other and they'll dive into their holes, which if we extend that metaphor, that'd be fine with me if most of the right-wing radio talk show host would just dive into a hole somewhere. But I think, we still got to... Well, let me back up. I wanted to just give you an idea of my election day.
Sure.
I voted early, and so on election day I decided to do some volunteering. Went down to the Democratic headquarters here, and they sent me out to hang, they call them door knockers. They're these little cards.
Right, yeah.
That you hang on doors.
Yeah, kind of like the do not disturb sign that hangs on the doorknob in the hotel.
Exactly.
Right.
And they gave me a little map, a little Google map of the neighborhood, or actually it was a neighborhood which was a couple blocks away. And they sent me over there. It's on the west side of South Bend here. And it's in a neighborhood which I guess by some people's standards they might call it, it's an urban blighted neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a lot, I think, in what's called the Rust Belt. It's close to what's known locally here as the Studebaker Corridor, which is, you know, where a lot of former industry, which is no longer there, a lot of rusty old buildings. But this neighborhood, you know, I rating by saying, you know, it's predominantly African American. And as I walked from door to door with my little Google map of registered voters, you know, I could see that along with the, in some cases, the, you know, a couple pit bulls tied to the front porch and mm-hmm. places like that, I could see that from the a lot of places there were that the Obama campaign had there a lot of work had been done there already, and I'm happy to say that the county, St. Joseph County, which includes most of the area of Notre Dame, you know, went for Obama. And to be fair, too, there were rundown houses, but on some blocks there were, you could see where there was a real effort being made by the people who lived there to improve the neighborhood. And as I walked the blocks hanging these things, I also came around, across a lot of small churches that had been, you know, their old homes that had been converted into churches. And whatever, you know, one might say about religion, I think in these neighborhood that I was in, these churches are kind of, if whatever else they might be, they're places where people can at least get a little hope. And a place where there is some positivity put forth. And I could see by also all the signs, the Obama signs that were in the windows, that people were really involved in this. And, you know, I kind of had a self-revelation myself because, you know, once we did get the results of the election, not that my hanging door knockers had, you know, it was my little effort, and I felt good about
every effort counted, Gerard.
Yeah, but I was happy to see that the county went for Obama, and I kind of got to thinking, you know, and I'm not much of one for sports metaphors usually, but it reminded me of, you know, and I know you've been saying on the program for the last week or so that this is just the beginning, and I've always felt that way. You know, Republicans have lost elections before, and they're not just going to go quietly into the good night.
No, that's why it is our job to run them to ground, as I've said.
Yeah,
we've got to force them to redefine and rebuild their party, and the hardcores that are making millions off of the weirdness are going to fight it for all they're worth, Gerard. You know,
oh, yeah.
Reference David Limbaugh there or Laura Ingraham.
Well, I saw a thing the other day. I don't know if you're familiar with theuptake.com.
No,
they've been doing like what I call guerrilla video. They were at both of the national party conventions. If you go there, they have a lot of really, I mean, these people are taking video, you know, risking getting arrested. They just had a lot of good video throughout the campaign. But they have video of this Michelle Bachmann from Minnesota.
Yeah, truly a loony, yeah.
Yeah, and she was at a conference. I think the video was like from 2005 or something. It was in, for some reason, she was at some on a panel talking about Iraq and also talking about France and what was going on in France when they were having all the rioting.
Yeah, yeah, I think I saw that, Gerard.
In the Muslim neighborhoods. And she actually comes out and says that some cultures have more value than others. And the uptake had this on video. And that's the thing.
Yeah, not all cultural values are equal or something
right,
like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was that's a closer quote. But, you know, and it's like there are still all those people are still out there. And I see no indication that they're going to do anything but keep up what they've already been doing.
Oh, they're gonna scream. They think that if they just screamed Bill Ayers a little bit louder,
yeah,
it would have finally stuck.
A few more times.
Yeah, they don't understand that they got the Jedi mind trick played on them.
You know, well, to get to my sports metaphor, I wanted to quote a famous NBA player he's from French Lick, Indiana.
Larry Bird.
Yeah, and I remember back in the day, because I was always a Detroit Pistons fan, and we always had to get through Boston to get to the finals, you know.
No, I remember the bad old days of Bill Laimbeer.
Yeah, and somebody was interviewing Larry Bird one time, and they were asking him, like, you know, why do you have this thing where, you know, you get up a little bit in a game, especially in the latter part of the game, and you just got to bury your opponent, you know. You know, this is when the Celtics would win by 25 to 30 points. And he said, well, you know, we just get up there, and I think, you know, why wait around? Let's just put them away. You know, and that's, you know.
That's exactly where we are right now.
Yeah, we need to step up and just, you know, politically at least.
Well, it's the same thing to extend your sporting analogy, Gerard. It's the same thing as the people who say, well, that was unfair. They run up the score last Saturday.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when you've got the third stringers in and they're still scoring, short of the other side just calling it quits, there's not much you can do.
Yeah.
So, you know, at this point, yeah, let's run it. Really, I hope to goodness now that this one's over, not to take the shine off of it. That's not my point. But now that this is over, I hope that thinking for 2010 is already well underway, because we got a bunch of Senate seats coming up.
Right.
And it could be a real problem. You know, I had an email in here earlier from our buddy David down in Tennessee. And he made a very significant observation. He said, it seems more and more obvious to me that Senator Obama, once sworn in, will take on a very limited number of tasks to complete so as to make the country better. A very limited number so as to avoid overextension and a face on the pavement moment that Hillary and Bill experienced when they got ahead of the nation on health care. Obama is nothing if not pragmatic. Please let the man pick good ones, being the issues.
Yeah.
Because, boys, he's going to have a boatload behind and untouched. Leave a boatload behind and untouched. And you'd like to hope that, and I think there's a lot of reality in that, and I think how could any newly elected president not sit down and prioritize and say, okay, this is the stuff we'll do in the first term, and here's the hard stuff we'll do in the second term.
Well, yeah, there was a guy on Bill Maher a few weeks ago. I think he's a writer for The Simpsons and a comedian. And he said, you know, I'll start to really kind of relax about the third year of Obama's term because of, you know, the kind of shenanigans that we've seen for the last 8 years. And who knows what, you know, we can't foresee what's going to happen. But it also, for this election, this past election, brought up for me and really kind of queued up my interest in what's going on locally. I mean, you know, where we stand. I mean, we've got in Indiana now, our General Assembly is mostly Democratic. But what's going to, you know, as far as the issues are concerned, what's going to happen? That's my question. You know, and how can we I mean, Mitch Daniels, his opponent was Jill Long Thompson, who I thought was a very good candidate, union endorsed. She's been around. She was in Clinton's Department of Agriculture, but she basically got a trouncing.
Well, that may be part of the problem.
Yeah.
The Clinton coattails have narrowed to the shortened to the point that they aren't there anymore. You know, you mentioned somebody in the Department of Agriculture. Didn't Nebraska just send to the Senate George Bush's Secretary of Agriculture?
Yeah, I think so.
I think they did. Yeah, but this is what we just scored in the first quarter.
Yeah.
There we go. To extend the analogy, we've got the first half yet to play. The first half will end 4 years from now. But if we don't go forward with a significantly liberal agenda that fixes what's wrong here, we ain't going to play the second half.
Yeah.
Because they'll have some weird freak out there. Maybe it'll be Mussolini. We don't know.
Well, either that or they'll try to replay the Clinton book and get them so mired down in, you know, special prosecutor hearings about sexual acts in the White House that, you know, that's what the focus is going to be for Obama. I don't think what happened to him specifically, at least, but there'll be some other issue.
But if we can,
bog him down with,
it's not going to be easy these first couple of years.
Yeah.
And everything, George Bush still has much evil that he has done that will carry over into the first couple of years of the Obama administration. We've got to do a good job of making sure that everybody understands that those are Bush problems that are getting solved and that nobody said this was going to be easy. That's why Obama was out there actually talking about sacrifice and the honor of the sacrifice of our parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it can be done, and if we're smart about it, by the time 2012 rolls around, we will have run these thugs to ground. But if we allow them to regroup, then that's our fault.
Yeah, exactly.
We got to stay on them. I mean, I hate to use. Well, I'm not going to use that kind of comparative language. But we've got to stay on them. And every time they try to raise one of these issues, we have to defeat that issue with the quality of our own ideas.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've been always bemoaning before the last 8 years how they frame the debate. Well. That's what we got to do, is frame the debate.
Yeah, and it may be a pretty steep learning curve because we haven't proven ourselves very good at it lately. But it seems that there have been improvements made, especially during the Obama campaign. Gerard, I've got to try to hit a couple more buttons here before we're out of here. But good to hear from you, and don't be such a stranger.
All righty.
All right, we'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Bye now. Gerard calling from light purple Indiana. You know, I'm surprised that the right-wingers in the religion industry haven't complained about French Lick, Indiana yet. I mean, that's the kind of, they're nuts. Maybe a big renaming campaign. But yeah, stand out on the arc and bury the threes until there's no way the Republican Party can catch up. Well, I guess I lost everybody. Doggone it. About 10 minutes left. Well, 5 minutes of good conversation left in the program. But thanks, everybody, for tuning in this evening. I'm glad you didn't all just sort of switch away with the Veterans Day remarks. This is one of those days that I don't think you can just sort of glide by. You can't do it. Because to do so is to display a level of callous disregard that we can't afford. And just, okay, hold on. Call rolling in here. Let's, here we go. All right, we'll take it in a sec. Doesn't make a lot of sense, but there's a certain protocol to getting. Here we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good evening, Bob.
Hey, Ed.
Wanted to call in and make a couple comments. Why does Georgia turn out the worst of the worst in politicians and like Newt Gingrich and Paul Brown and people like that?
Well, I don't know. I think it'd be a pretty stiff competition to between Georgia and, say, Oklahoma. Oklahoma actually, out of the elections, Ed, turned out to be the reddest of red states. Both houses of their legislature are now controlled by the Republican Party. And they're just going to get weirder. They're part of that. They're part of that whole thing that I was talking about earlier. They don't see anything wrong. It's what's wrong with America for not acceding to their right-wing fundamentalist views. It's not what's wrong with their ideas.
Yeah. Well, how did they get a foothold like that, Bob? Is what is my question. I mean, how many people are that stupid enough to put people like that in office?
Oh, I think you know the answer, Ed.
Maybe I do and don't realize it. I don't know.
You can't swing a ball bat in Oklahoma without hitting a fundamentalist church. Same thing applies to Georgia.
I thought it might be money, you know, because oil, you got a lot of oil in Oklahoma, don't you?
Well, there's an oil industry there, but it's their fundamentalist industry that really fuels that fire. Now, on the other hand, for instance, you take a place like Colorado, that's the home of the New Life Church and focus on the family and all that garbage. But there's also a significant progressive liberal population in places like Denver and the outlying communities there that can counter it. But that community is it's practically non-existent with a couple of exceptions in a place like Oklahoma. And once you get outside of metropolitan Atlanta in Georgia, you've pretty much left civilization too.
Well, you know, I said that you and I had a talk before, and it seems like all those states down through there are 100 years behind the times. And to talk about unions and about legislators running for office on the basis of the right to organize and talk union, those people are raised almost in isolation.
Yeah.
Compared to the freedoms that start somewhere along in West Virginia and move north. You know, it's no wonder that the things are like they are. That I have never heard of a politician talking union from the South. They don't know the difference. And they're brainwashed by the Chamber of Commerce down there to believe that all the unions do is take your money and tell you what to do. So I don't know, but... Yeah, the thing I wanted to ask you is what is all this crap I hear about the guns? Obama going to try to take, is that some more Rush Limbaugh stuff?
Oh, sure. Where are you hearing it?
I heard it on CNN today that somebody was talking it.
Well, they are talking it. This is one of the best things that's ever happened to the gun manufacturers and the NRA. Because once again, they're going to trot out the same old tired garbage. Oh, Democrats are going to get your guns. Well, the last I checked, we had 8 years of Bill Clinton, and there's more guns in America, not less.
Yeah. Well, there's going to be more now because people are making a mad rush to get the guns.
Oh, they're going crazy buying them.
49% up.
Yeah. And it was up. It was up since this time last year, and it's gone up even more since Election Day. There's people grabbing up guns left and right. I got a quote here from the CNN story where somebody said he bought him a new .45 just to hedge his bets.
Yeah, well, I've got enough of them, so I don't need to go out and buy any more. But
get this, Ed. From November the 3rd to the 9th, the FBI received more than 374,000 requests for background checks on gun purchasers. That's a 49% increase, like you mentioned, over the same period in 2007. Some gun stores are running out of models. The little right-wingers and stuff are running out and buying all the AR-15s and the Uzis and so forth like that. Yeah, because I don't know if you've ever... Well, you can't go... Those aren't for hunting anything.
No. I mean...
Those are slaughter guns.
I only knew one guy. He took a... I had a machine gun. He bought it from me and took a deer hunting. Of course, there wasn't nothing after he fired it a few times. There wasn't no hunters left in the area. They heard that rapid cack, 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 you know. And
yeah.
There
wasn't no deer left in the area either. You know, those things aren't exactly accurate. I used to go hunting out near a place where a fellow would hunt from his four-wheeler, and he had a semi-automatic rifle that he hunted with. And every now and then you'd hear that four-wheeler crank up. Then it'd come to a screech and halt, and you'd hear, blam, 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 blam.
Mm-hmm.
And my buddy that I was with would look over at me and, yep, melt the barrel, Daryl.
Yeah, I saw them hunting off. They got even got mounts on them four-wheelers for some of them guns they got. And they just run the heels. Trying to find a trophy, and if it's not a trophy, they just leave it lay or tell somebody they can have it.
Oh yeah, gut shooters, road hunters. I mean, you gotta love the idiocy, Ed. Connecticut resident Scott Hoffman said in this story, "It's a fact that the liberal Democrats that now control all three branches of our government do not like guns. They want us out of business." They don't want the average American to have the right to defend themselves. Do you notice he said that we control all three branches of government? I wonder what those three branches would be to Connecticut resident Scott Hoffman. There's the legislative, and, well, yeah, we've got control, but we still can't do much Republicans really want to stop us in the Senate. We're still in the mud.
Mm-hmm.
We control the executive branch. We've got the presidency. Where's that third branch we control?
Yeah.
If he's talking about the judicial, I watch the news pretty close, and I haven't seen anything about Scalia or Alito or Roberts or Slappy Thomas or Kennedy stepping down. So I think they still got a majority there last I checked. But Ed, I've run up against the end of things. I'm sorry I didn't get to you earlier. I'd like to have had this conversation go a little longer, but we'll try again another night. All right.
Yep, sure thing.
All right.
I'll talk to you later.
Okay, talk to you later, Ed.
All right.
Bye now. And that's it. Man, Slap ran out of time. Sorry about that. Thanks to everybody. Thanks to new listeners. Love hearing from you. Thanks to you who have been here the whole time. We're all just one happy little family. Thanks to Peter Godbold, John Fox, and Ben Birch who make everything here work. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, the hardest working, bravest people I know. CRMW.net and coalriverwind.org. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
Now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop, all the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. It is now 1 week since the glorious Election Day, and most people in the blue bubble are doing very well. Of course, the blue bubble is blue states and those of us that voted for Barack Obama, and to which I probably include new states such as Virginia, North Carolina, Ohio, Florida, Nevada, what else? Colorado. Lots of new blue states. And I got to say, the country is pretty happy. It's nice to see not just the 53% that voted for Barack Obama, but even many of those that voted for John McCain are saying that they think Obama will make a good president. Most recent poll I've seen shows that 65% of Americans think Obama will make a good president. Now, that's good, right? He won 53%, so that's another additional 12%, or, you know, some one-fourth of McCain voters preferred McCain, but also think Obama will make a good president. It's nice to see that kind of optimism. And I have to praise John McCain and even George Bush. And let me, you know, I don't praise John McCain, and I certainly don't praise George Bush very much. But John McCain, in his concession speech, I think set the right tone. I can't complain about it. To me, it was the old John McCain, the one I used to remember back in 2000, a reasonable guy, although one I certainly disagree with. And that was before they removed his brain and replaced it with Karl Rove. Apparently, the takeover of his body, the poltergeist, if you will, that took over John McCain's body and soul all during the election, put it in the control of Karl Rove. Some people call that particular poltergeist that inhabited his body as Steve Schmidt, who used to work for Karl Rove. The same guy, by the way, that apparently was behind the vicious attacks on John McCain in 2000, saying he illegitimately fathered a black baby. Well, John McCain apparently decided if you can't beat him, join him. And so for the duration of the campaign, took on the Karl Rove tactics and ran one of the nastier modern campaigns. Of course, I got to say that they've been all virtually all nasty ever since Lee Atwood in the 1980s. In any case, apparently that demon was removed when John McCain lost, and I have to say that since the election, he's been acting respectably, and all in terms of bringing this country together. George Bush, a man I don't praise very often, has also been acting, I think, very respectfully. He understands that his party lost. He just greeted, of course, Barack Obama to a trip to the White House. We know that his wife, Laura, was nice to Michelle, and that's as it should be. Transitions should be that way. They should be amicable. McCain and Bush recognize the American people have spoken, and they've lost. I have to tell you, though, not everyone in the Republican Party feels that way. Some 27% of Americans, so if a, that would be a half, not even, actually more than half, maybe two-thirds of the McCain vote, are anxious, afraid,